We were talking about first impressions of John Hanna and President when the tape ended. Going back to some of his style as President in the early years, when you first got here, there was a you were mentioning his maybe the direct personal interest that he took in faculty.
Yes, he did, and if it's not that he kept up with you. But he did have that opening reception where he greeted each person. And I know that in the early days when some of the faculty that he wanted to keep, as I said earlier, he was building a new faculty in a new university. And so he was gathering people from faculty from all over the country, from all, he loved to get people from Ivy schools, and from the East and West Coast, etc. And he wanted to retain these people. Very often, some of them would get a good job off and want to leave. And he would very often personally, and this is hearsay, take them up to his office and say, now you want to stay here. He would personally try to convince them to stay and share with them, I think, his vision of Michigan State becoming a great university, abandoning that cow college image. So in that sense, but he was a very, well, I hate to say dictatorial, but he was an autocrat. Mm-hmm. He had a vision and he was out to realize it. And on the one hand, he didn't see a strong faculty having a say in the running of the university is the way to achieve his goals, mm-hmm. I think.
So faculty were somewhat out under his administration. They were cut out of the governance, or
well,
it was limited?
Very, very limited. Mm-hmm. Very, very limited. And the 60s brought about that change, mm-hmm. those changes. And that's something he couldn't handle. Mm-hmm. When the students and the faculty became more rambunctious, it was very difficult for him. And that's why he really retired precipitously, mm-hmm. without any provision for his replacement. Mm-hmm. And so it was because the times had changed. Mm-hmm. But during his time, he was able to create a really go a long way towards fulfilling his vision for Michigan State. He did wonders for Michigan State. He was a remarkable person to have had in office. The university was very, very lucky. Mm-hmm. But he was a man of those times. He mm-hmm. couldn't deal with the late 1960s. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he, I remember the faculty used to call him Uncle John. Behind his back. Uncle John, he was always referred to as.
Well, I'd like to talk a little bit later about your husband's experience, but Dr. Horton, if we jump ahead, obviously, mm-hmm. a few years, mm-hmm. When you first met the Hortons, what any impressions that you remember?
Well, they seemed to be a delightful couple. Mm-hmm. They were very cultivated, both of them. They were very much Easterners, both of them. They brought a certain, refinement, a certain sense of gentility to the campus. They were, that was what I think of in terms of the Whartons.
Mm-hmm. And any differences in administrative style that you saw? In either approach to teaching or
well, by then
university,
I was like most faculty, pretty much removed from the president and an administrative style. I mean, if someone were to ask you about all the presidents under you who were president, most of the time you're not even aware of what's going on. I think that the Wharton was a more, how can I say it? I don't think he had the kinds of dreams for Michigan State University mm-hmm. that Hanna had. he wasn't propelled by this desire to build a great university. He was there, I believe, he saw himself as administrating a going concern and to do it as well as he could in a very, I keep using the word refined, that's the way I think of him. Mm-hmm. I think of him, a cultured person. And
You had social contact with many of the presidents,
yes,
of course, in that time. Were there any special occasions that were almost always where all the presidents were brought together, or that
yes, recall? Occasionally that would happen. For instance, when I think it was DiBiagio who wanted to have the boardroom up on the fourth floor of the Hanna administration building, to have portraits of all the presidents. And at that point, DiBiagio had hired someone, a firm, really, to do these portraits. And it was done with photographs that they then did something with that made it look as if it were a painted portrait, but it really wasn't. Mm-hmm. And at that time, all the presidents were brought together for that purpose, and that was done. And at various affairs, for instance, when John Hanna died, I remember Wharton came back to attend the memorial service, and we saw them then. And we would occasionally run into them, because, you know, Wharton was an economist. And as several of the presidents were, as it turned out.
Cecil Mackey.
Yeah, Cecil Mackey. And so that at economics meetings, I would sometimes see Wharton.
I see.
Yeah.
In
after he left here.
Mm-hmm. In looking at any of the provosts and some of the other people, that, and maybe the Board of Trustees, that were there any that you recall in your experience or in your husband's experience, that any Board of Trustees members that you think might be good interviews, or that are still living that might,
yeah,
be a good interview,
well,
or be appropriate?
One person I remember that you may want to think about interviewing is Blanche Martin.
Okay.
Because he lives in the area,
mm-hmm,
he's still alive,
mm-hmm,
and he was on the board when all the student activities took place,
mm-hmm,
and so he would have a very clear,
okay,
view of it. You may, if you could, interview Larry Owen, who was chair, and what was his name, who he was with the, what foundation was he a member of?
Russ Mulvey?
Yes,
okay.
You may want to interview him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he would be close to.
He was chair for quite a few
years.
He
was, and he was a person of substance and devotion to the university, and you might, because he may be getting along in years, so you should put him on the top of your list. I have no idea about the state of his health, but.
If we could talk a little bit about your husband's career, Ayer at Michigan State, and his decision to. To come to MSU, did he have several choices, or was this?
Two choices. One was at LSU in Louisiana and Michigan State at that time. And we just chose Michigan State for some reason, I guess, whatever. We didn't think in terms of LSU. So we came here thinking, like everyone else in those Cherry Lane brick apartments, oh, we'll be here for a year or two and then we'll take off. We're not going to stay here. I mean, it was. So we came. When Walter got the job and he told his fellow graduate students at Yale that we were going to, they said, oh, you'll love Ann Arbor. It's a very interesting place. Well, they never heard of East Lansing. They didn't ever hear of Michigan State College.
Mm-hmm.
Others who were a little more knowledgeable, perhaps, said, you know, it's going to be very interesting. People will bring you, farm goods. They'll bring you potatoes. They'll bring you chickens. They'll bring you, etc. So the whole Eastern attitude of what is in store for us, this is what we came with. And Walter was the kind of person who was, he believed on his list of values. And one of his highest values is loyalty. And once we came here, it was clear that he developed this very strong loyalty to Michigan State. And there was it would have been almost impossible for us to leave after a while. He had some run-ins with his chairperson initially, and as a result, he was thinking of the possibility of leaving. But that was only very initially. And I got a friend of mine, a faculty person here, who's retired now, I'm not going to mention her name, who is the daughter of a faculty person at Michigan State, long time ago, who Walter knew and worked with on university-wide committees, showed me a letter that her father had sent to her. She said her father's practice was to write a weekly letter to all his children. And she said she was putting his affairs in order, and she came across this letter written in the early 1960s. And there was just three sentences devoted to Walter. He said, you know, Walter, a good guy in my estimation, really blew his top at Hannah because the faculty wasn't being informed of what was of decisions being made by the president and the upper administration, and he really blew his top. He'll have to leave. I got such a kick out of that letter. It was typically Walter, and it was a misreading on her father's part of Hannah, because Hannah would not have. Walter believed that if Hannah thought that your best interests were Michigan State, that you weren't just, you know, shooting off your mouth just because you felt like doing it. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing it in what you thought were the best interests of Michigan State, he would tolerate it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he wouldn't. And so, but anyway, I thought that was very amusing.
Yeah. This issue of loyalty, was there any point where you knew personally that he was really committed to continuing his career here? Is there anything that stands out where you recognize that he had made his
decision? Well, he turned down a lot of offers.
He did.
Academic offers and non-academic offers. For instance, he was offered the executive, I don't know what the title is, executive secretary or president or whatever it was of the Independent Bankers Association. And I remember its headquarters was in Sauk City. And he turned that down. So he wouldn't go outside of the academic profession. He had a pretty realistic understanding of his strengths. He knew that teaching was an area of his strength. He loved teaching. And his focus in economics never varied, even though the fashions in economics changed over the years. He retained his focus. He had a strong belief that for a healthy society, you can't have concentrations of power.